Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody. It's Weird Islanders, the podcast, back once again. My name is Dan. That is Mike. How are you doing tonight, Mike?
I'm pretty good. Excited for our guest and this player and the year we're going to touch on, which is, I don't know, I have conflicted feelings about this season.
Yeah.
Because of how, where it was played, first of all, and also who was on the team and how that player left. And it's just, it's funny how it was an amazing ride at the time. And now I look back on it and I think about this current team and the stuff that they did in 2020 and 2021. And, you know, I really have to wrestle with why I find this group so much more endearing than this season we'll talk about now, despite this season, the year we're going to talk about being incredibly important in this kind of whole adventure. So, and this player, this Weird Islander, had perhaps the most important goal of them all in that playoff run.
Yeah. I'll get to it, but this, I always think about our flagship podcast, Islanders Anxiety, when I think of this season, because this was a wild ride. And yeah, that was almost like an appetizer for what was to come. But we'll talk about that season. We'll talk about one particular player who, again, played an important role in it with our special guest. He is a returning guest. He is one of the minds behind the Isles Fix newsletter. He is the host of the Eyes on Isles podcast. And he is now an in-demand children's book author. And he is our friend, Joe Buono. Joe, what's going on?
What's up, fellas? Thank you so much. I have quite a few titles all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Your business card, I think.
The Wade Dublowitz Weird Islander episode sprung you to new heights. Everybody wanted a piece.
Yeah.
Well, we got to talk about the book, Islanders A to Z, which is everywhere now. It's being advertised by the team itself. Everybody that's worked with the team has been talking about it. I have a copy. Mike has a copy. It's absolutely fantastic. My daughter is going to be 13 in a month. Mike's daughter is just turning one, right?
And she just turned one.
She just turned one. So he's got the current usage of it. I remember books like this. I still love it. So tell us, like, why this? Like, why a children's book about the Islanders?
So going back almost a decade now, I had the itch to write a children's book, sports, and it's another concept that I haven't been able to execute on, and it kind of just has sit on Microsoft Word documents on a laptop that I need to fire up for it to work. And then when I had my daughter in 2018, I started thinking about it again. I had a lot of children's books around you, and specifically there was one. It's called A to Jay-Z. I'm not sure if either of you own a copy of A to Jay-Z, but it was a historical look back at rap artists and R&B artists, and they had these little cute little rhymes about Eazy-E and Coolio and Dr. Dre and Eminem. I was like, that's really fun and cool, and I said, maybe I can execute that with the Islanders. And first off, I needed an illustrator, and I knew Joe Morasic, and I knew his work online from Twitter, and I reached out to him, and he had the same kind of thinking that he always wanted to do something like this. So to be able to find someone who's not only immensely talented, but also was an Islander fan and had a passion for the subject and his own reason to do it was a great match. And we started, you know, thinking about who the letters would be, and then eventually had to ask permission with the Islanders to make sure this was all okay. Because originally we had a picture of John Spano. So you imagine kind of we were going more tongue in cheek, you know, with it. And it ended up, I think, a lot better off the way it came out. Yeah.
That's the unauthorized version has Spano in it. But so what was that process like of like talking to the Islanders and getting them their approval? Because you're using not only licensed, you know, properties, the logo and all that kind of stuff, but like, these are real people that are in this book, and the illustrations by Joe are fantastic. Like, you know, Al Arbor and Bob Nystrom. And there's my favorite one is the Darius Kasparaitis, Mike Gartner, sort of like looking at each other picture. It's a perfect recreation of that. But like, what was that process like of working with the team? I mean, was it easy, or was it a lot easier than you thought it was going to be? Or was it a lot of red tape and stuff?
So funny enough, the person that I got recommended to talk to was Nick Puzzatello, who's the executive vice president of New York Hockey Holdings on the business side. And actually sign guy, Patrick Dadd, was the one who recommended I talk to Nick.
Oh, wow.
Because we had already started with some ideas, and we were going to maybe draw some fans. And I had talked to him about it. He goes, you should talk to Nick. And I'm like, who's Nick? And he goes, Nick Puzzatello. So I found him on LinkedIn, messaged him on LinkedIn, and he got back to me. And we had a phone conversation, and he set up a call with some members of community relations, and Rena being one of them. And then he called me back a couple of days later and said, we're going to do it. We're going to give you intellectual property, but we get final sign off on what goes in. And we want to make sure a portion of the proceeds benefits the Islanders Children's Foundation, which we're, of course, let's do this. So, you know, that was 2018, 2019. Now the book didn't come out until here in 2023. That's not all because of the Islanders in that process. We had COVID. That wasn't going to be a year we were going to do it. We weren't going to do it during the shortened season. Things got kind of even out of whack the first year of UBS Arena. But for it to line up with the 50th anniversary season, I'm just thrilled the way it worked out at the end. And a lot of changes happened in between because things like Butch Goring and John Tinelli getting their numbers retired did not happen when we first started writing it. Them actually moving to UBS Arena had not happened. It hadn't reached the conference finals yet. So like I look back now at what I had originally written in 2018, 2019, and a lot of it is gone because so much happened within that 3-year period. I mean, Barry Trotz was in the book himself as X's and O's. And we had to make that change on the fly and went with the generic kind of hockey whiteboard and you know, told a story about some of the history of some of the coaches. But yeah, it went through a lot of changes to the point it got released.
That's funny. Yeah. And I was going to say, like, you talk about Butch and him and Brendan and Jigs and Stan Fischler, as a close friend of both Mike and I. They're all part of the book. They do the intermissions and the pregame and the postgame. And, once the team was on board, I'm assuming they were pretty easy to get to. But, like, how cool was that? Like, just being talking like Jigs McDonald.
They actually came first. I had that done first before I went to the team. So I reached out to Brendan as the first person, because he was just in a similar part of his life where I felt like he got the concept of trying to connect with your kids through sports and teaching them the history of the teams you love. That was kind of my thesis, if you will. And he said yes. And then I said, okay, well, what about a pregame instead of a prologue? And then could we get someone to do the postgame? Why not Jigs? And I had Jigs on podcast a few times. So I had his phone number and reached out to him, and he said yes. Stan, you guys know Stan, emailed him. He got right back to me, told him the concept over email. Sure. How many words? You tell him how many words. And then a few hours later, it's in my inbox. It's done. And I've been emailing back and forth with him because we had a tough time getting that book to Israel. It finally made it after about 3 weeks. We finally got it today that we're recording here. And then Chris King was the final one to do. And it was a really important one because it allowed us to get Butch Goring in there. And Butch went from, where are we going to find him? He can't be B. He's not going to be Bossy. He's not going to be G. It's going to go to Gillies. Where do we find Butch? And then he ended up having a lot of words written about him by Chris King. So it all worked out.
The whole thing is absolutely fantastic. And we're going to talk a lot about it towards the end of the show too. But let everybody know where they can buy it right now. So while they're listening to us, they can go order a copy because it is really fantastic. Listen, even if you don't have kids, buy the book. Like, buy it for somebody you know that has kids. Buy it for your own shelf because it's the artwork is fantastic. It covers amazingly just a handful of pages. It covers really the entire history of the franchise, and it's just a great little history book to have, whether you have kids or not. So, where can everybody buy it so they can go look for it?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that because people think, all right, it's a kid's book, it's a baby book, and it's really not that. You have the images, yes, that would appeal to kids. But the actual writing will teach you a lot about the history of the team that either you're going to get a kick of because you love the Islanders, or you actually will learn some things. And I think for that 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old that we all remember being when we're just upon the cusp of becoming a crazy diehard fan, like, this is a book that you will like read and devour and all of a sudden kind of complete the picture for the franchise. But you can go to store.bookbaby.com. and search for New York Islanders A to Z, or visit us at IslesFix on Twitter, and you'll find the link at our bio.
We will repeat that at the end too, but yeah, definitely do it. It's great. And again, a portion goes to the Islanders Children's Foundation. So it's a win-win-win for everybody. But we are here to talk about a guy who, funnily enough, is not in the book. And you can explain why. He is a weird Islander. He is one that I think people will remember because he was not that long ago that he was playing for the Islanders. And he is, in fact, still playing as of today, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So, Joe Buono, will you please reveal the subject of tonight's episode of Weird Islanders, the podcast?
It's Bridgeport call-up turned playoff hero, Alan Quine.
Quina.
Quina.
The Quina. Playoff hero is the way to, is the right, correct term. But this man did not have the normal kind of timeline for most playoff heroes, particularly Islanders playoff heroes. He had a weird way to get to the Islanders. He had a very weird time with the Islanders. And then he had kind of a normal exit with the Islanders, especially for this time. But so why don't you tell us, first of all, like, how did Alan Quine first, he was in the book, and then unfortunately he ended up on the cutting room floor, much like Kevin Costner in The Big Chill. This happens a lot to big stars like Alan Quine. So he's not in the book, but he almost was, right?
He really was. I mean, when you go through the Islanders database and look up Q, there are not many options. And I thought Alan Quine was a great way to weave in the 2015-16 season and that team. And I have these little rhymes underneath each picture that I'm quite proud of. And the one for him, I went back and found his was, in the 2016 playoffs, he would thrive scoring the double OT winner in game 5, right? And that was Alan Quine. But as the book kind of came together, he kind of just stood out. I mean, the fact that it was Nystrom and Gillies and Potvin and all these heroes and all-stars and Alan Quine, it just didn't feel right. And then when the Islanders made the Islanders Hall of Fame such a bigger deal at UBS Arena, it really gave me pause. I said, I should have everyone that has a plaque needs to be in this book.
Yeah.
And we had to rework some things to make sure we got Patrick Flatley in. And then we ended up moving Q to Quick and wrote something really nice about Bob Bourne. So again, I'm really happy the way it came out. But Joe Morasic, the illustrator, had drawn Alan Quine during that playoff run. So we already had the image. So I was trying to save him some work as well. But it there's more to it than just that one big goal we're going to talk about. There were a few really big things that he did as well during that period.
Yeah. If you send him that picture, I guarantee that'll make his life. If you send Alan Klein that picture that Joe drew of him. But so let's start with how he ended up on the Islanders, because as Mike mentioned before, he was drafted by Detroit and was not signed. Apparently, they didn't even make an attempt to sign the man who would go on to be a playoff hero for the Islanders. They just let him kind of go. He was drafted
third rounder.
He goes unsigned. He gets redrafted by the Islanders in the sixth round 2 years later in 2013. And what I found funny, just as a quick aside, was the Islanders had a draft pick kind of around the same time named Robbie Russo, who was a defenseman. I had kind of high hopes for him. He was not signed by the Islanders, and he ended up signing as a free agent with Detroit, or he got redrafted by Detroit, I believe. And so I've always kind of seen this as sort of like the Robbie Russo, Alan Klein trade. I don't know if I'm the only person who might think that way. I'm probably Robbie Russo was kind of knocking around too. He ended up in St. Louis, I think, for a while or whatever. But this was always kind of a weird, like, this doesn't really happen to the Islanders. Like, they don't sort of redraft guys that were let go. Maybe they end up as a free agent. But he was drafted by the Islanders in the sixth round 2013, and he ended up playing a lot for Bridgeport. He would play 196 games for Bridgeport over his AHL career, 51 goals, 86 assists. What was like your kind of impression of Quine during this time, sort of before he came up? Was he like a prospect you had your eye on? Was he kind of a forgotten man a little bit? Like, I don't remember thinking much of him during this period until he came up. But I mean, was he somebody that you kind of had your eye on?
I mean, you were noticing the goal production, right? You would go and look at and follow what was happening with Bridgeport, and he had 20 plus goals and, you know, had a 60 point season in 2014-15, and then was kind of following that up with a similar type of season. And then certainly the Islanders were having some injury problems towards the end of the year, but I don't think he was really a talk about ever making the team in camp at any point. It wasn't like everyone on Isles Twitter was saying, when are you going to bring up Quine? You know, like, right, yeah, that wasn't happening. It's like, now it's like Dufour and, you know, Iskakov, and we want to see him now. And that never happened with this guy. So you noticed the production in there, but you always thought maybe unfairly that he was just probably a 4A type player somewhere between AHL and NHL, which he ends up being in his career. Yeah. But not at that point. That's what the assumption was.
That 2013 draft actually ends up being interesting for the Islanders on a couple levels now too, because it's Bo Horvat, Ryan Pulock, like these, then, and of course Alan Quine. But I think when they redrafted someone, I think this was kind of getting to the point I was talking to you guys about, was it's one of those things like when they drafted Sebastian Aho, he was older. I think he was like 20 or something. He was one of the older players in the draft.
Yeah.
And when a team makes kind of steps out of line a little bit on a pick, and then your antenna just goes up a little bit, and they kind of just become, they kind of just land on your radar a little, like, for a while. There was another guy around this time, Brandon Kitchton. Okay. I remember he had a contract thing with the Islanders too.
Right. Yeah. You end up going to Winnipeg.
Right. Right. Yeah. And these guys, like, you, none of them ever turn into anything. Like, I mean, Sebastian Aho, maybe he's proven us wrong, they kind of just become names that you talk about because the way they were drafted was so peculiar for what we're doing now. Mm. When everything is just, you drafted a guy who was born in April. Like, that knocks down his percentage of becoming an NHL or by like 6%. So when you do something like this, you right away, you're like, okay. And then, like you said, he was a third round pick by the Red Wings. So what was he really? Was he a third round pick or was he a sixth round pick? Cause I'm assuming that when a team doesn't sign someone and he re-enters the draft at an era that it's kind of rare for this to happen, he's just going to get passed on because of that. And right. I think it's pretty fair to say that Alan Quine was a sixth round pick, the way his career panned out, but a good sixth round pick. Who I also had like a funny, there weren't many, I don't think, prospects at the time in the system. And so like when Quine was kind of the, I don't know how to say it, like who it would be now, but like the guy that they kind of just always tapped, or it felt like they were always just going to go to Quine when they needed a body. I think that the Islander fans were like, you know, how much more do I need to see of Allen Quine or Bracken Kearns to know that like they're not, they're probably not the answer that we need. They're not going to be the answer to the existential forever question of who's going to play on the wing with
well, that, John Tavares. That guy was Jesse Yohansu. Was always that guy for me. Like, I don't need to see any more Jesse Yohansu. I know what Jesse Yohansu is. And that guy now is Otto Koivula. Like, we've seen enough of Otto to know. No offense to Otto, but we've seen enough of Otto to know.
No offense to Otto, but he will be a subject on the show, almost guaranteed. And there was somebody in Anaheim for that Anaheim Ducks game who was wearing an Otto Koivula Bridgeport Islanders jersey in Anaheim. Just spectacular.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
You know, the guy that the Islanders picked in the next round of that draft is still playing in the NHL.
Yeah, it's Burrows, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Is Look he still in Vegas just... or is he with Vancouver now?
Vancouver.
I think he's with Vancouver, yeah.
Beauvillier in Vancouver, yep.
Oh, wow. I had no idea. I didn't know that the 2013 draft was such a rich one for the Islanders, even though it took Bro Horvat 10 years to get here. So Quine, again, spends most of the 2015-16 with Bridgeport. But then he gets called up for two games in the regular season. And this is like, we started talking about this a little bit off the top. Like, when I think of this season, this 2015-16 season, I remember an absolute roller coaster. Like, they just, this was a season where the Islanders were the, you know, the opposite of the analytics darling. They were the analytics, I don't know, nightmare or whatever. Like, they gave up a million shots. They got by on spectacular goaltending from Thomas Greiss, who I think that might have been his first year, right? Who was signed as the backup. And they didn't score a lot. They always looked kind of lost on D. And but somehow managed to gather 101 points or 100 points. Like, it was crazy, which was, you know, they had 101 points the season before. And they were going to the playoffs. So, I mean, Joe, what was like your takeaway from that season, you know, in which Allen Quine played the, you know, two of the last whatever regular season games? Like, I just remember that season giving me a lot of agita. Like, I just didn't like it at all.
Different type of agita that I remember. So I actually remember exactly where I was when Allen Quine made his debut. I was at my wife's good friend, who was actually our maid of honor's house. And I was asking, you know, they had a young kid. We didn't have kids yet. And I'm like, you know, not really into hanging out with young kids at this point. Hey, Islanders are playing the Sabres. Can we put that on? You know, while this is going on in the background. And the reason why it was a big deal, if you remember, is that the Islanders wanted to be the seventh seed. They did not want to be third in the Metro and end up having to play the Penguins, who ended up winning the Stanley Cup that year. So they brought up Allen Quine, and you mentioned Bracken Kearns, and they combine for a goal. And Quine scores his first goal in the NHL.
Second power play for the Sabres, but now Omark down, the pass in front, tipped in, and it's Allen Quine on a shorthanded goal for his first goal in the National Hockey League.
And he puts pressure under Omark, and he has control, little chip in front, and that one just goes off the knee, and you're allowed to do that.
Scott Mayfield actually scored his first NHL goal in the same game as well, and they lose in overtime to Buffalo. But then that sets up a situation where the Rangers, I think, play the 9th, April 9th. And then the Islanders are going to play the last game of the season against the Flyers. And the Islanders actually trailed the Rangers by 1 point going into the final game. And I think Capuano sat 12 regulars in that game, to not to win. And they go out to a 2-0 lead right away. Nikolai Kuhlman, and then I think Matt Martin score. And I remember it's very strange watching that, being like, we don't want to be ahead of the Rangers. Like, we really wanted the Panthers,
right?
Rightly or wrongly. And then they ended up actually giving up 5 straight goals to Philadelphia, who also ended up being in the playoffs of the 8th seed. So that's kind of my remembrance of him coming up, of those are games that you did not want the Islanders to win. And I remember that first goal being something I was not happy about.
that, and you know, you mentioned Bracken. We've now mentioned him twice, Bracken Kearns, and this roster ends up reading very funny for a team that got 100 points. You just don't understand how,
right?
As Dan was
great
saying,
coaching.
It was great coaching. four goalies played, and Jan Grice was just outrageously good. Grice had a 925 that season, and Halak was not far behind at 919. But what's crazy about this season, and I'll go into why it's like a complicated one. It's pretty obvious, but there are 10 players from 2015-16 roster that are still on this team, or in Matt Martin's case,
wow,
left and not, and you know, or,
right,
you know, and then there's two others who you can kind of say are in the orbit, which is Boychuk and Hickey. So show me another team in the NHL that has 10 players still on the roster from 2015-16. That's 8 years ago. I would be shocked if we could find one. And maybe I'm wrong, but and we're not just like, these are 10 important players: Nelson, right, Lee Bailey, Kuzikis, Mayfield, Pollock, and Pellick. Like, this is bizarre. Russ Johnston made his debut that season.
The most important of all. I would say, probably just off the top of my head, probably the Lightning. That's probably the only other team that probably has almost as many, because you got to figure Stamkos and Point and Kucherov.
Right.
But even they might not even have 10. Like, I don't even know.
It's nuts.
That's crazy.
Well, here's the big difference between these two teams is one is Tampa Bay Lightning, who won,
right,
two Stanley Cups with 10, went to do another one with those guys, and the other one, New York Islanders, these guys have probably finished at every standing place except for first. Like, you can imagine. It's so funny.
It is crazy. It's insane. So they go to the playoffs. Again, it's a 100-point team, and they get the matchup that they want with the Florida Panthers, who at this point this is like their, what, fourth or fifth playoff appearance all time as a franchise. They haven't won a round since 1996. Of course, the Islanders can't really make fun of them because they haven't won a round since 1993. So somebody is getting off of a very, very long schneid here. And the Islanders take game one.
Game one, 5-4. Alan Quine, the primary assist on the game-winning goal to Ryan Strome.
Oh, okay.
So he's already starting to make his impact. Remember, he doesn't think he's going to be playing on the playoff roster. He thinks he's done after two games with a cameo. And he gets told by Fred Thompson, who's still the head coach of Bridgeport, with all those players still being there that you mentioned, that he's going up because the Islanders had all these injuries, that Andrews Lee had broken his leg, and Grabowski was out, and they were looking for a little bit of offensive firepower, I guess. And Alan Quine got the call.
I forgot this was the year that – yeah, Lee broke his leg thanks to Boychuk.
Boychuk shot.
Slap shot. Right.
Yeah.
So they lose game two. Game three is the Thomas Hickey overtime game winner. They lose the game four to the Panthers. And here we are, game five in Florida and Sunrise. And this might be the most insane double overtime game in the history of the NHL that nobody talks about. Like, this game had everything. I went back and watched it. Yeah, okay, fine. We remember this goal that we're going to talk about. But, like, I completely forgot how much insanity happened in just the overtime periods. Like, how many times do you see that many penalties called in overtime, let alone a penalty shot, let alone a stopped penalty shot? It was crazy.
And it's a penalty shot with essentially, like, their best one of their best players.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like the third line. It's Barkov. Right. With the game on a stick, one-on-one with Grice to win it.
He didn't stand a chance against Grice that season.
Particularly.
I remember also vividly, just before we go on, like, Rick DiPietro was a big part of the broadcast at that point. And I remember,
he was.
He ate off like the top of a rat, like one of the rubber rats for the Panthers. And I was like, you know, he was just doing these, like, very shticky type of cartoon character type of co-host type of things. And I remember just being all fired up and ripping off the head of a rat before the game.
He was always wearing crazy suits too.
Yes.
And I just remember thinking, what, Rick, like, we get why you're like this, and like, you're committed to the bit, but we don't need it. Like, our our broadcast over already like over indexes on this kind of shtick. We don't need another one. And by the way, it's five. There are five Lightning left from that season on the team.
Wow. Doubling them it's up nuts. And then some.
Yeah. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. Just totally bizarre. How many, it's another thing that nobody talks about with this team is like,
yeah.
Just, but yeah, that season and series, this is kind of what I was getting at. Like you wanted to get so excited about the fact that the team was staying, in New York and on the landmass that's known as Long Island. But like it was pretty clear halfway through that season, like that Barclays just wasn't going to be the same. And then the playoff run like kind of helped that. And so I kind of got over it. But then I don't know about you guys, but a couple years later with what happened with Tavares, like I still have a tough time watching these highlights. And I don't know if that's just me because I know a lot of people count that
series. It's not just the goal. It's you know,
game
six, the whole series. I mean, that was a like John Tavares is the best athlete in New York afterwards type series.
Right.
Like the type of articles were being written.
Yeah, that series was won by basically two players on our team. It was the goalie and Tavares and that's kind of why, and I guess Alan Quine, but that's why I have such a tough time. I really like, and I don't know if that makes me, you know, we've already well established on this show and Islanders anxiety that I am a loser, but like, does that even make me more of a loser that I can't even find the joy to watch these highlights?
I feel the same way. Yeah, I feel the same way. That goes running Tavares highlights. Like I just feel I don't know. At this point, I think it's safe to say I'm committed to hating this man for the rest of my life. So I'm just never, the moment he left, that kind of wiped away much of the joy of that goal.
It wiped away moments like this, like Alan Quine.
Yeah.
Like it changes how I feel about Alan Quine.
If you want to look back at the 2015-16 playoffs, you know, the highlight in game five is the one you watch because there's no one on the ice that you have to feel conflicted about. I guess we'll talk about
that too,
when that goal is scored.
So let's talk about the goal. So they're in double overtime and Derek McKenzie takes a penalty. This was not going to sit well with Panthers coach Gerard Gallant, who we'll talk about again in a second. But this sets up an Islanders power play with, I don't know, about 5 minutes or so to go in the second overtime. Now, again, this is a rare occurrence. Most NHL overtime games, you have to literally try and murder somebody in order to get a penalty. And I don't remember Derek McKenzie trying to literally murder somebody. I forget. I think it might have been slashing or something like that. That's what it was. It was a slashing penalty, broke somebody's stick, and like the ref has to call it. And that sets up what has to be the unlikeliest. I know Ken Morrow had a goal in overtime, and I'm sure there are other, David Volek obviously is one too, but like this is easily one of the most unexpected overtime goals in Islanders history. And it's Marek Zidlicky. It's Hickey. It's it's Quine from Zidlicky and Hickey. And like to steal a phrase from Butch Goring, Quine makes no mistake on this. Like he just tees up, he gets a one-timer and he just nails it.
Now Zidlicky waits at the blue line, lays it across to Hickey, back to Zidlicky, thought about a shot, now Quine fires, he scores! Alan Quine has answered one of the four questions. The Islanders now will look for a fourth win on Sunday and a series winner. But Alan Quine has won it in overtime at 16 minutes of the second overtime period. Islanders 2, Panthers 1. Islanders lead the series 3-2.
And somewhat of an unlikely hero, Howie, and Alan Quine, not that long ago in the American Hockey League, comes up to the National Hockey League at the end of the regular season. The Islanders are really looking for bodies. Heads back to Bridgeport, gets recalled to play in the playoffs, and now he's scored the biggest goal of his NHL career, maybe his professional career, an overtime, double overtime on a power play, a wicked shot over the glove of Luongo.
And Luongo didn't have a chance on that one, Brendan, or Howie in this case, and that was the end of that, and game five was over.
You want to take a shot at who the other two forwards were on the ice at that point?
God, I was just watching it. Was one Ryan Strome?
No. Worse.
Oh.
It is a ragtag. This is like a PP unit 3 Kuhlman's on the ice.
Wow. Yeah, he's probably this and at the front of the net, Kuhlman and
and the omnipresent Josh Bailey's the other one. So Bailey, Kuhlman, wow. Quine with Hickey and Jidlicky. And that's wow. the unit that scores.
It's giving me when Koivula was getting PP time the other night.
And this was the second longest playoff game in Islander history at that point, next to the Easter Epic, also in the
book. Wow. That's crazy. So like, where were you when this goal was scored, Joe? Were you home? Were you?
Yeah, I was home. I lived in Brooklyn at the time, so I was just at home, you know, watching it. You know, it's the type of moment. I was still doing my thing on Twitter at the time, Isles Blog before Isles Fix, and I didn't really know how to do like GIFs back then on my computer, so I was like filming everything off of my like TV screen and then editing it off my phone and just trying to get out highlights and stuff like that. So it's pretty, you know, pretty involved. But yeah, just, you know, it's one of those things where you're watching and I had tickets to game six. I don't know if Mike did too. But I only lived four subway stops away from Barclays Center. So it was incredibly convenient for me to go. And I had season tickets that year and I ended up, you know, I was behind the net in the 200 section 215 for game six. And I just wanted to be there because if they were going to finally win in advance in a playoff round, I wanted to be there. I had never seen an Islander handshake line with them winning a playoff series. And I really wanted to be there. And that was only going to be possible if they won game five. So yeah, you want to obviously take a 3-2 lead in the series, but I wanted to be in the building for that potential moment as well.
Yeah. I wasn't at game six. I didn't get to Barclays much. I was working nights at the time too. So my schedule was all messed up. But I remember walking out of where I was watching the game in the city, from work and not really knowing how to react to the handshake line and just being like, this is a totally foreign thing. And for John Tavares, it was to this day, his only one, and while these other guys, the other 10 guys on that roster from that are still with this team are just used to it at this point. Like Brock Nelson could tell you what it's like to shake how strong Sidney Crosby's handshake. Brock always got a good handshake because I've shook it a bunch of times with a big smile on my face. Well, you know, Tavares, he only knows what Derek McKenzie's is like, which is crazy. But this is this team. That building too, like it's
strange. Can I give you guys it's not an exact example because the building shift is definitely different too, because it's the year after the final year at the Coliseum, right? It's go from 2014, all that nostalgia around that, and such a special, like innocent climb type of team where the expectations were not much. Boychuk and Letty, guys are starting to come into their own a little bit, taking the next level. They were there.
That was the 101 top teams in leagues. Season.
The whole year, in, you know, unfortunately lost that last game of the regular season in the shootout. Otherwise, would have had a game seven at the Coliseum, which is a shame. But I'm a Mets fan, and growing up 17, 18 years old, I don't know of how closely you guys follow baseball, but the 99 Mets were the first Met team to make the playoffs since 88. So really the first team making the playoffs for me as like a teenager. And they won like 97 games and, you know, put the Braves to the brink, the game six. The next year's team went to the Subway Series against the Yankees, but I always look more fondly of that 99 team. Just the players, the characters, the feel of the season was just different. That first type of feeling of success. And again, that innocent climb feel. And then the 2000 team was a little bit more, it just, even though they went further, it didn't feel the same. And I think the same way about these two seasons where they got obviously over the hump in advance, but if you ask me which season was more special to me, it'll always be 2014-15.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Regardless of how Tavares left, like before that, it would have felt that way.
Because it almost feels like that was a different version of him, too. Yeah. Like the Coliseum version of him, and then it was a little bit further away from what ended up happening too. And he obviously scored some huge goals in that series. And he had that moment where, at the end of game six, he was like pumping up the crowd after they won that crazy game with Kuhlman. But I think you kind of nailed it, right? Like this team feels different. Like you're basically saying, okay, there's no Lubov Visnovsky, but hey, we got Marek Zdlitsky. It's a very different. It's just like a different. It's almost like they, because of the building shift and the roster construction, it didn't have that same identity to it, that same kind of us against the world feel to it, which is funny too, because like we've said a bunch of times, like then 10 of these players end up sticking around and basically perfecting that ethos.
Yeah. Well, the 2014-15 team, like I said before, like they played a great, fun sort of breakneck style that was very, like they were a lot of shots. They really pushed play and were one of the better teams in the NHL until the All-Star break, and Kyle Poso got hurt, and then they kind of tailed off a little bit. And like Joe said, they came one game from getting home ice advantage in the playoffs. So yeah, no, I agree with you that team I felt more fondly about than the 15-16 team, which I don't know, felt like it felt like a roller coaster that at any moment could have completely gone off the tracks. But here they are in game five, and Alan Quine, of all people, wins this game. Very unlikely goal scorer here. So, yeah, you think? I mean, these guys definitely didn't know who Alan Quine was before that game and that series started. But he got mobbed by his teammates. A long-haired Matt Martin in there hugging him. And that sets up game six, which was another double overtime game, like we just said, and the Tavares game winner.
And the game-tying goal. I mean, you're in the seat watching this, and you're going, they're going to blow this opportunity.
Yep.
Like, it's if it's not going to happen now, it's never going to happen. They're going to get shut out.
Right.
They're going to lose 1-0 on home ice with a chance to go to the next round.
To the Florida Panthers.
And then, he jumps off. Tavares jumps off the bench, and he's the extra attacker there. And, you know, it's a play. The two goals he scored, I don't think I've seen two goals like that since.
Yeah.
You know, where the puck is just sitting on the line. No one knows where it is except the best player on the ice on either team. And he just literally touches it 2 inches to go over the line. It's just crazy.
And that overtime goal against Luongo will live in infamy. That was also the year that Jaromir Jagr was in Florida and scored no points, if I remember correctly, in that series. So,
Jagr was obviously there the last time the Islanders had won a playoff series in 1993 as well. And guys, I will tell you this, this thing, I did not realize this until I started doing some research and looking at the box scores, because I know you don't watch it often or watch it ever, and maybe you've knocked it out of your brain. On that Tavares game-winning goal, you know, Poso plays it up to him, the shot, the rebound, the rack of wraparound. Alan Quine got the secondary assist.
The guy was everywhere. He was everywhere. And it's insane. This is, well, we're going to get to the eventual punchline after this next bit where we talk about the next series, which was against. So the Islanders beat the Panthers, celebration. Howie Rose is going crazy. The guy, his last year in his job, finally gets to see the team he covers win a playoff series. Bedlam in Brooklyn, all kinds of craziness. But then the Islanders have a date with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And this was, again, before the Lightning won back-to-back cups. And, Joe, you talked about blowing opportunities. Let's talk about this series against the Lightning. So the Islanders win game one in Tampa. Shane Prince has two goals in that game. And if I'm not mistaken, Alan Quine had a couple of assists on those, didn't he?
He had a four-game point streak, I think.
That's crazy.
In the playoffs. And, he had two assists in that game.
That's crazy. And, I mean, crazier than Shane Prince having two goals, and they look very comfortable. So they lose game two. Okay, whatever. Hey, you got the split in the road, start a series. Awesome. They come back to Barclays Center, and in games three and four, the Islanders had leads with, I believe, under a minute to go or something along those lines. Blew both of those games, lost them both in overtime.
Yeah.
And I will never, this was where I think Jack Capuano lost me. I had been, kind of a Cappy, not a hater, but not a lover either. This was where I was like, this dude, this is not the dude. Like, this is just, playoff teams close these games out. And, it happens once. Okay, fine. But, man, back-to-back games, that was
so brutal. Game three, so they get the split, right? They win game one. Yeah. Quine had one. He had one assist in game one. I'm just double-checking here. I want to make sure I get my Alan Quine back straight.
I knew there was at least
one. But he actually did have an assist. He had a secondary assist on the only goal in game two. So that was the four game. point streak. But in game three, the Islanders actually had scratched Josh Bailey for game two. which now is happening again all these years later. And he scored the opening goal of that game in the first and then scored a goal in the third period as well, which gave them the 3-2 lead. They exchanged goals. And like you said, the Islanders are now up under a minute to go. And I remember the theme after that game was that Capuano had kept like his scoring line on against their top line for like the defensive zone faceoff that led to the Kucherov goal. And everyone was basically not understanding why that line would have been out at that juncture of the game.
And I think, was it Boyle in the second one?
Boyle scored on that. And it was Boyle in game three. Yeah.
And I remember because that was the year that the Rangers had basically started to just trade players to Tampa Bay, like, or, you know, they would just find their way there, Boyle and Callahan. And just, I that Lightning team drove me nuts.
Hugely unlikable team.
Yeah, just Ryan Callahan. I remember Callahan getting into it a couple times with I can't remember who it was on the island. It might have been Cizikas, like a young Casey Cizikas. And then, like, Boyle, just the celebration and the look on his face. I was there for 3 and 4 in Brooklyn, and I feel like he celebrated right in front of me and, like, pointed at me, basically.
Game four, the moment I remember in game four was the Hickey hit on Drouin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which Hickey had several of those throughout the course of his career. That one, you know, place was going nuts. And like you said before, Dan, right, they gave up another third period goal. And that was a quick one in overtime. That one was done real quick. I feel like it was a hit. Yes. I feel like it was a hit that was like controversial and there was like a no call. And then Garrison scored like a couple seconds afterwards.
Yep.
Yeah,
I was gonna say it was some defenseman, and it was Jason Garrison. So
it was
sounds about right. I think that was a curiously refereed series, and then, so now all of a sudden they went from being up one game to nothing to being down three games to one. They go down to Tampa. They have like a no show performance. Season is over, and the magical run is done. You know, after one series, and. At the time, you know, this felt like a cool step, but now it is kind of a bittersweet memory to look back. But it looked like the team was poised for new things. Again, 101-point season, lost in the first round, 100-point season, lost in the second round. Like, things are moving. They're moving in the right direction. They come into the 16-17 season, and this is Alan Quine's main regular season with the Islanders, his longest season in the NHL, and he puts up 61 games played, 5 goals, 13 assists in 16-17. Not good numbers, but certainly, could have been worse, I suppose. I'll be honest. So this season was not good. Like, this, they missed the playoffs. This was the beginning of the John Tavares campaign to get him out of Long Island from every corner of the NHL. And so, this was also a time when Alan Quine started to become an injury problem. And I'm going to just be blunt. This guy ended up getting hurt so often between this season and the next season that there were times when I forgot he was even on the team. And this is a guy who scored a huge goal this season, you know, in the playoffs earlier. And it was not long before I was like, oh, wait, who normally go in there? Oh, right. That's Alan Quine's spot. I just completely forgot about him. I'll start with Joe. Like, Does any play from this 16-17 season stand out from you and being like, yep, that's Alan Quine right there? I mean, he only had 18 points, so it wasn't a lot, but
there's
I don't remember really.
There's really nothing that I can I went back and I watched somebody did like a Alan Quine 2016-17 highlight video that I checked out, but there was nothing that came to mind. You know, he gets a 2-year contract from the Islanders after the playoffs. Oh, yeah. And he's still very young at this point. He's 23, 24 years old. And, you know, you're hoping that, he was playing top line and it's just in a, if he could handle that stage, you know, maybe he can do more than that. And remember, transitional year for the Islanders, no more Oposo, no more Nielsen. They swapped them out for Andrew Ladd and Jason Kamara and Matt Martin.
Have some chemistry with Ladd. If you go back and look at those highlights, there were some goals where they hooked up for it. They were pretty cool.
Yeah, so, there's nothing that really stands out. But like you said, any kind of hope of any kind of stability, at least with the Islanders, kind of, went out the door with the injuries, and it wasn't too far. You know, he scored his last goal with the Islanders in 2016-2017. No goals and three assists in only 21 games the following year. But he wouldn't be a weird Islander if he did more right. than that. So.
So here's where we get to the point where when we were talking about this before we came on, I had messaged Mike. I'm like, hey, Joe's coming on. He's going to do Alan Quine. Mike's response was, I have no idea how many games played Alan Quine had with the Islanders, and whatever number you tell me, I'm going to find out when you send it to me because I don't know. And I'll be honest, I didn't know at the time either. And so we were just talking about this too. So Mike, what did you think it was before you saw what the number actually was?
I thought it was going to be double this.
Yeah.
What the number was,
mm-hmm.
which like basically two seasons worth of games, regular season games, I guess I should say, or maybe more. Because it feels like that.
Yeah.
Because the journey, like I said, like he was a first 6-round draft pick. He got talked about a lot because of his draft status. And then when he came, he made a very immediate impact. So I completely lost the plot that he only played those last two games before he played the playoffs of that season. I thought he had played like, you know, a healthy dose, like a, you know, good 30 so games, like an Eric Bolton kind of dose of games in that season. But I was wrong. And I was way off on the number. I knew I was going to be off because it's like this.
Right.
It felt like a lot more to me.
Well, see, I went the opposite way. I thought it was way less. I thought it was going to be like maybe somewhere around 50, 60 games. Because he got hurt all the time. And that was what I kind of remembered. Joe, like, where did you, I mean, you saw the number, but like, were you surprised by the number of games he played for the Islanders in his career?
I think he loomed larger in my head. So,
right.
So yeah. Cause, when, you know, you have your Excel sheet of all the, weird Islander candidates and, he was not a name that I expected to be on there. Cause you think of him in three separate years, but it's only two regular season right. games of that previous year, and the playoff games, you know, don't count towards that. So it's like you remember him in 2015, 16. You remember him in the next couple of years, but yeah, within that time frame, it's you know, well short of 100 games. So
yeah,
again, he was just one of these guys where you felt like, you know, could they get lucky here? You know, because he had 20 plus goal potential in the AHL. Could there be something here where they get a top six, dare I say, type forward for nothing on the cheap and, you know, it just did not materialize.
No. So his final numbers as an Islander, 84 games. That's it. Over the course of three seasons, 84 games against 61 in that 16-17 season, but two in the year before, but the year that included his crowning glory, that playoff run. And then, like Joe said, 20 something games the year after, 6 goals, 16 assists, 22 points. That is Alan Quine's
scored 6 goals.
I know. It's insane. Like, yeah.
he felt like someone who was scoring, you know, 10 to 15.
Right.
This guy, we can say this about everybody that comes on the show or is a subject of the show, but he's got one of the most peculiar Islander.
Seriously.
Story arcs.
Yeah.
Because there was no character development. Then all of a sudden he's the star of the show. It's like if you took the show Lost. And you just dropped a character that everybody fell in love with for two episodes and then killed him off and then basically just never talked about it again. That's what it feels like with him because
standalone episode. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That doesn't tie back into like the main plot either because the season kind of happened in a different alternate storyline where with Tavares and the building that he played in. Like it's a flashback.
Yeah, there was also flash forward and like flash sideways, and, you know, all this weather. I was going to say
Thomas Grice playing 925 in goal.
I remember there being an episode of Lost that was like one episode of just this couple that no one ever spoke to again.
Yeah,
right.
Yes, yeah,
I can't remember their names, but I remember that was a standalone.
Right.
But yeah,
I was going to say.
I mean, what other like playoff heroes? I think actually in the clip of Howie Rose. And Butch, they talk about like they'll live forever in playoff lore, and it's true. I mean, he will because that series was their first series win for an entire generation of fans. So he'll always be remembered.
It's crazy.
It would be like if Koivula ended up scoring the double overtime winner this season, honestly.
Right. I was going to say, it's almost like he's almost like a song with this like face melting guitar solo right off the jump. And then it's just really kind of boring after that, you know, it's just like, and then it just ends and then the song just stops. It's like, well, wait, what happened? Where'd that cool solo go? Bring that back. But yeah, that was it. 84 games, 6 goals, 16 assists, 22 points in 3 seasons for Alan Quine. But that one goal, that one moment, that pass from Marek Zdlicky and that one timer past Roberto Luongo in double overtime in Sunrise, Florida. That's his legacy right there. And it's just, we talk about this all the time on the show. Like, does this guy know about his legacy? Cause we'll just machine gun through this next section here. So by the time his contract is up, Lou Lamoriello is the GM of the Islanders and he just doesn't resign him. Like, he just kind of doesn't even give him a qualifying offer. He just lets him walk. So he ends up signing with Calgary. He ends up signing with Edmonton a little while. He did play some regular season games with Calgary. About 20 or so after the Islanders, but again, mainly played in the AHL and Stockton. He was signed with Edmonton. He ended up playing a lot in Bakersfield. He then signed a bunch of AHL contracts with the Henderson Silver Knights, who were the Golden Knights farm team, and then he's currently with the Ontario Reign, the LA Kings farm team, but I don't think he has a Kings contract. I think he's on an AHL contract only. Oh, I forgot to mention that Florida series netted the man a profile in the New York Times by Alan Crada. So it's like, this guy shows up and he gets, you know, how many Islanders even have New York Times profiles? I don't know, but Alan Quine is on the list. It's a little crazy. And he's still playing again. He's still in the AHL. He's still playing, you know, he's still doing pretty well. But this game is his legacy. And to get back to what I was saying before, I wonder if he understands like the gravity and the importance of that goal to Islanders fans, given that it was, you know, whatever, 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
To think that's the goal that colors every single thing we know about Alan Quine is centered around. That's the sun to which it all revolves around. It's crazy.
And like we've been talking about, because of, you know, the circumstances around John Tavares, it's the happiest goal that you remember from that period that you don't, like, if they had to do a montage at UBS Arena of playoff goals, they may still, they probably not may, they absolutely will not include Game 6, but they may throw in Game 5. You don't have to worry about Zdlicky and Hickey being there, right, and Kuhlman and Bailey hugging him. You know, that one is safe. That's the one you play.
Yeah.
They should do Game 3. That's the Hickey one. I like that one.
The Hickey one is a great celebration. Super Mario Brothers celebration. Plus the great part about that one is, maybe this is not a good thing to say, but I think people were just nervous, but it was really quiet in the arena. And if you see him coming down the slot and you could hear him on the highlight go, "Brock," and Nelson feeds him the pass and he puts it in against our Hall of Fame goaltender. These big goals against Ducks.
Yeah. So there you go. Alan Quine in a nutshell. And it's this, we've been recording for 56 minutes and we spent probably about 45 of it talking about one game one series and one playoff series. It's completely insane.
And if someone wants to go back and look at those last few minutes, he has an opportunity right before the goal on the same like 35 seconds. Yeah. It's a wide open net. The puck just jumps over his stick. Like, he had like this yawning cage and this like awkward bounce that came to him on the deflection. Like, he was going to be, it was like a Final Destination type stuff, but like with him being the hero, like one way or the other, this was going to work out for Alan Quine. It's like, oh, you missed that one? Okay, now you're going to have to beat Luongo on a one-timer, you know, from, you know, how many feet out along the boards. It's crazy.
It was just his time. So he made it into Islanders playoff lore, but he did not make it into New York Islanders A to Z by Joe Buono. So what's next for the book? I mean, we've been talking about the tour, but you really have been doing this book tour. You've been on a lot of Islanders podcast. Well, first of all, you have your own podcast. We should not forget about Eyes on Isles that you do with Andy Francis. And I listen to all the time. So you do that. And you do obviously Isles Fix, which if everybody is not subscribed for, you should. It is an invaluable resource. I read it every morning. It's fantastic. You guys do so much work. I don't know how you do it, but I am appreciative of what you do because it's great. But so what's next
On this tour? I don't know. I mean, like we're trying to, I'm trying to get the book in the Isles Lab bookstore. I've been talking with the team about that, but there's you know, things, you know, with retail and, you know, how much you can, you know, sell it for, and, you know, the bulk orders from the self-publishing company and things like that we're working through. You know, maybe I'll be able at one point to be at the arena and have maybe a table or something like that. And if people want to buy it there in person, that'd be pretty cool. So I'm hopeful of maybe one more cool moment at UBS Arena. The day that I did like the photo shoot or the website and everything, Corey Wright set it all up. It was the first time I was back at the arena since the first ever game. And I got to be like in the dime club for the, like, the day, like they gave me the pass and I'm looking around.
That's awesome.
Me and Joe were like, is everything free? Like, so, you know, and got to talk That's to cool. Brendan and Butch and Eric Hornig and got to go around and Greg Picker and Chris King and Shannon. And it was just a great experience. It's one of these things like in life where you picture how something is going to go for so long. And then the actual event actually like exceeds your expectations. So that's just been great. And the Islanders have been awesome around it. And today I got, this was like a wing and a prayer. I sent the book to the producer of the Ray Ferraro and Darren Drager podcast.
Oh.
And he actually talked about the book at the very end of the podcast today. So
that's awesome.
That was awesome. That was a really cool amazing. One. That was like, nothing's going to happen for this one, but he's in the book. I'd like to be able to get it to him. And it's been really cool. So we'll see. And then I'm sure you'll be hearing me promoting it a lot, of course, come holiday time next year. And, you know, I appreciate all the great feedback we've got of it. And again, I said this every time someone asks me, the real star of this is Joe Mrazek. I think I'm a pretty decent writer and I'm writing about things that all happened in the past. But this book is not possible without his artwork. That really is just such a bright, colorful, fresh way to kind of reimagine and remember the Islanders. You know, history years.
It is very cool, and you should follow Joe Mrazek at Graphics Joker on Twitter if you haven't already. He's a very vocal Islanders fan out there, so you should check it out there. The work is fantastic. Have any of the players have you sent them? Because a lot of them have little kids. Like, I don't know,
they might really be into this sort of thing. Anders Lee's the only active player in the book, so that was a kind of a decision we came to with the Islanders around like active players. And I'm so glad they pushed us in that direction because, again, so much changed, and you don't know how things can go from one year to the next. Yeah. And a great book comes out, and someone gets traded or leaves in free agency, and all of a sudden it's like, I don't want to look at this page or look at the book, right? So we really focus mostly on, you know, past Islanders and alumni, but Anders being a captain, we felt like, you know, and the team was cool with him being the only active player on there. I don't know any feedback from the players to this point. I'd love to figure it out how to do it. Maybe I'll see how I can get it in their hands. They don't got to do anything with it. It'd just be cool to know that it's somewhere within their houses in Garden City at some point.
I think they'd really like it.
Yeah.
And where can people buy it again?
So you can either go to store.bookbaby.com and search for New York Islanders A to Z there, or go to @IslesFix on Twitter, and you'll find the link in our bio.
So there you go. Check it out. Oh, and I forgot to mention off the top, by the way, my condolences on Fordham basketball.
Ooh.
Just barely missing the NCAA tournament. My wife is also an alum. It would have been very cool. Unfortunately, it was not meant to be. Of course, my alma mater, St. John's, is a total dumpster fire. So I wish you guys had that.
You know, my father-in-law is a Columbia grad who's had season tickets for St. John's for 25 years. He's adopted them for some reason. Yeah, it was a great season. Very surreal to see even like Fordham playing a somewhat meaningful game. It was talked about in any kind of lore. We'll see whether or not they can back it up. They ended up signing the coach to an extension. So the fact that he's going to stick around is one positive, but one big step this year. Yeah.
That is pretty cool. And it is cool to see them in the limelight. Michael Eboff, any final thoughts on Allen Quine and the goal of a lifetime, basically? Oh, we forgot to mention the most important thing. This is still Allen Quine's only NHL playoff goal. This is it.
I think it's going to stay that way.
I think so. Yeah. You're probably right.
No, I think we did a pretty good job, and there's a, I do think it's a, you know, when the main character of the season, his career ends, I'll be able to kind of revisit this thing as long as said character doesn't go off and do something that I won't even say. and I think then I can start to have some closure and appreciate what happened in 2015-16. And Allen Quine, a lot more. But until then, it's just
hearing your voice, strange... Mike, and hear you talk about said player or avoid talking about said player is a reason why said player is not in the book. It was a drawing. It was a drawing of that Joe did, which is an awesome drawing from like the game,
sure,
game winner from Washington. Again, it'll remain unseen.
Yeah, I think that's for the best. And, yes, I think that was a smart move. So if you were on the fence about the book, I don't know if I want to get it. Maybe you know who's in there. It's safe.
It's all clear. It. Yeah.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, very much. Michael Leboff, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read his work and listen to his work at Action Network. Follow Joe. You're still at Isles Fix, right?
At Isles Fix is probably the one. If you want to hear about Mets baseball and Edwin Diaz, at J Bono NYI. If you want to hear about the Islanders, at Isles Fix.
There you go. And sign up for Isles Fix. Honestly, it's fantastic. Listen to Isles on Isles podcast. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day. And we will be back next time with another special guest and another weird Islander. And until then, keep the Islanders weird. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.